Hi guys, my name's Andrew Davidson with AsPerMyAbility.com. Growing up, my family was not what anyone would call outdoorsy. That doesn't mean I dislike being outside or I'm incapable of enjoying the vanilla sky as the sun slowly lumbers below a magnificent mountain range. However, about two decades ago, I produced my own doctrine for the tenuous relationship man has with the wilderness. Nature is trying to kill you. Don't believe me? In 2007, actor-director Sean Penn released Into the Wild, a biographical adventure true story about Christopher McCandless, an upper-class white high school kid who, for whatever reason, felt a strong call to live off the land in the middle of nowhere completely alone. After graduation, McCandless drove his nice car into a moderately sized creek and burned up every dollar to his name, which was around $25,000. He strongly desired to live in a minimalist life by living at the Denali National Park and Preserve located in Alaska. McCandless's dead body was found by Alaskan hunters on September 6, 1992. His body showed signs of being dead for nearly a month before being found. McCandless survived a whopping 4 months in the Alaskan wild before dying from either starvation or eating toxic berries located within the area, which slowly poisoned his malnourished body and immune system to his eventual death. In the biopic film Amelia, where actress Hilary Swank takes on the role of the tenacious go-getter American pilot, Amelia Earhart, even though in this writer's opinion, something about the whole film just doesn't quite land, pun intended. In the early 1930s, Earhart established multiple flying awards, first American solo to climb to an impressive 18,415 feet, first American to fly the entire North American continent and back, the first woman to fly solo across the Atlantic at a record pace of 15 hours. Amelia was known to wear pilot outfits, you know, like khaki MC Hammer pants, a brown leather flying jacket, goggles, known to smoke Lucky Strike cigarettes, or at least, you know, that's what it said in her contract, and was typically found at social functions with dirt or oil under her fingernails. Akin to her crass demeanor, especially for women at that time period, Amelia had big, big plans. In 1937, she promised to fly a two-person pilot plane that Amelia chose to fly along with Fred Noonan operating the navigation. The goal in 1937 was to fly around the world. However, towards the end of the journey, after gassing up, Amelia took off from Ley, New Guinea, headed for Howland Island, a tiny, tiny and ambitious spot to hit in the middle of the Pacific Ocean. The operating procedure was to coordinate with U.S. Coast Guard ship Itasca stationed at Howland Island. Unfortunately, weather was not the best, and the two ended up losing their check-in with Itasca. Radio problems plagued Amelia's ship, and while the Coast Guard broadcasted Morse code, the plane was not equipped to receive the code. Some thought that they may overshoot their mark and continue to the next check-in at Honolulu, Hawaii. However, the two never made it to Honolulu. Popular opinion states that they drifted off course, crashed, and both died somewhere in the Pacific, although zero bodies or any plane parts have been recovered. The two simply just disappeared into the clouds. The 2005 found footage documentary film, The Grizzly Man, tells the true story of Timothy Treadwell, a school teacher who dedicated every summer to live with grizzly bears in the Katami National Park, where he would record himself and the relationship he was ever so slowly establishing with the local grizzly clans. Unlike the aforementioned biopics, The Grizzly Man is composed of film shot by Treadwell himself. He believed humans could approach brown grizzly bears without showing any fear, standing your ground, and the animals will learn to accept the individual as part of their land, part of their family. In 2003, on Treadwell's 13th and final journey to the national park, he happened to bring along the addition of his new girlfriend, Amy. Unfortunately, the lovers stayed past the summer and into October. Treadwell always had a pre-established flight out by the end of summer to return to the corrupt and polluted civilization he loathed until next summer. By October, the Katami Bears busied themselves with collecting food for hibernation. And that year, for multiple reasons, there sat a shortage of food to satisfy the multitude, turning them far, far more aggressive than normal. Caught on camera, Treadwell is mauled and eaten alive, followed by his lover, Amy. One of the final scenes in The Grizzly Man shows park rangers tracking, killing the aggressive bear with a shot to the head, opening its stomach, and pulling out from the stomach one of Treadwell's disconnected arms with a wristwatch attached, still ticking. Oof, I can still see it when I shut my eyes. So now that I've shown my work, repeat after me. Nature is trying to kill you. Before getting to the crux of this episode, a brief aside, if I may, and I'll make it quick. Yes, I'm well aware of reality TV shows like Naked and Afraid and Alone, to mention a few, but I've rejected giving them any credence because they're TV shows, and I doubt a hit show will be surprisingly without due diligence yanked off the air due to contestants being eaten by a lion or a bear. I mean, we have no clue what preventative measure those types of shows have in place that are just off camera. Am I right? Okay, so continuing along our examination of history, let our story begin with a distinguished Stoic individual named Percy Fawcett and the year of 1925. Fawcett is a 45-year-old British man with wife and kid. Before the war, he made numerous treks to South America on behalf of the Royal Geography Society, the RGS. Between 1906 and 1924, Fawcett made 7 RGS-sponsored journeys to map Chile, Argentina, and the Brazilian Amazon rainforest. In 1914, while on journey in the Amazon, Fawcett found what he thought to be primitive pots and pans and other knickknacks, things never seen before and in an area not known for tribal settlements. Also, Fawcett found a 10-page manuscript written by an unknown Portuguese author. The manuscript was addressed to a Portuguese colonel with no name about a great civilization located in Mato Grosso, an undiscovered part of Brazil located deep in the center of the dangerous forest. Unfortunately, when the Great War broke out, Fawcett, the brave patriot he was, returned home to fight for his country. All the while, he never forgot about the Lost City, which he began to call the Lost City of Z, or Z, because that's how non-Americans say Z, I guess. After the Great War, Fawcett is pushing 50 years old. He is well decorated for his wartime efforts and receives the Distinguished Service Order, given to, quote, military personnel in the service of His Majesty for outstanding command and leadership during active military operations, unquote. Before Fawcett grows too old for exploration, he desperately plans to end up back in South America to discover his lost city of Zed. In 1920, Fawcett sets off alone. He ends up having to kill his horse and turn back within a few weeks. Now, the next time, in 1924, Fawcett is financed by a large group of London investors. With an Amazonian exploration party proportionately financed, Fawcett leaves for Brazil with his eldest son, Jack, and Jack's longtime friend, Raleigh Rimmel. A fully funded exploration allowed for plenty of canned food, powdered milk, flares, plenty of ammunition, and a chronometer. Fawcett knew and dreamed of the expedition, and he knew it was going to be a success. He was determined and positive. He was old, but very, very well trained and experienced, and the other boys were young, tough, and in good health. The journey was taxing, as the men traversed deeper and deeper into the heart of the Amazon. They came across dangerous animals, striking weather, and indigenous tribes. Now, Fawcett developed a policy to not torture, kill, rape, harm, or steal from any of the tribes that they would come across. In fact, he was altruistic by giving some of his food to the indigenous tribes, who provided them with shelter. The last known location of the troop is found in Fawcett's journal, which reads, "Here we are at Dead Horse Camp, latitude 11 degrees 43 south and longitude 54 degrees 35 west, the spot where my horse died in 1920. Ah, but Fawcett's coordinates were not quite correct. But how could a man with a lifetime of experience get his position wrong? How could he screw up the coordinates? That's like asking Tony Hawk to do a kickflip only to watch him fall on his bum. That's like asking Chris Rock to not make jokes on TV. That's like asking Rick Astley to give you up." Some people believe that it may have been a result of human error when copying down the coordinates to be stored for search party information. Others believe that the heat and constant fevers led Fawcett to becoming obsessed with the leaking of any information as to where the lost city of Zed may be located. He was paranoid that a search party would accidentally find his lost city before him and his gang. Dead Horse Camp became Percy Fawcett, Jack Fawcett, and Raleigh Rimmel's last known location. Naturally, there are a handful of conspiracy theories that I won't spend extra time delineating here. In 1929, the RGP had the men officially pronounced dead. The men were never found, not their bodies, not their bones, nothing. They just vanished. And that's even after Percy's wife launched many, many search party expeditions. In 1979, 54 years later, Fawcett's signet ring, the one that he was known to never take off, wound up in a British pawn shop. Now, this occurrence, 50-some years later, has given historians and conspiracy theorists new life that maybe, just maybe, after all this time, one of the travelers returned to London and hid behind the lights, in the dark alleys, among the masses, and under the flagrant corruption of civilization. Those of you who have not experienced the pleasure of losing at Robinson Crusoe, well, my heart hurts for you. There is no other game in existence where players have a ton of fun losing together. For the sake of brevity, I won't be walking you through how the base game plays. All you need to know is that in Robinson Crusoe, you and your friends try to survive on an island without catching a disease and dying, being torn apart by a tiger, freezing to death, or starving to death. For clarity purposes, I'd like to be specific about the game I'll be reviewing. This, I believe, is a seminal moment, as it will be my first foray into reviewing an expansion instead of a base game. The expansion on the docket for review is Robinson Crusoe Mystery Tales, a campaign expansion to the regular Robinson Crusoe game. Both products are produced by Portal Games and designed by Ignacy Trevicek of the Detective a Modern Crime board game fame. The Mystery Tales expansion stays relatively true to the base game mechanics. The significant appeal of Mystery Tales is receiving new pieces, new cards, new tiles, and also a 5-game mini campaign booklet titled The Lost City of Z. The Lost City of Z takes 1 to 4 players on a short campaign narrative adventure. The primary objective of the campaign is to travel to South America, locate Percy Fawcett, and discover his secret city. Now, you rest your pretty little head, as I have not included any spoilers in this review. The box contains the campaign book, an old weathered journal, and an envelope that reads, "Contains Colonel Fawcett's diary. Do not open unless instructed." In the Lost City of Z campaign, each scenario progresses you a little further into the story, further into the jungle. As I've already sworn off spoilers, I will simply say there are plenty of plot points and surprises to keep you and your friends entertained. The supermassive downside to the campaign is that anything Ignacy's finger touches turns to be tough as nails. Each scenario adds more objectives and prerequisites on top of keeping you and your mates alive. The campaign is punishing, sure. But the look of the booklets, the tokens, the art, the writing in the journal, the production, everything is beyond par. While it is a longer game, there are only 5 games to the campaign, which makes it easier to sweet-talk your friends into signing up for the ride. Honestly, this is a stellar production. If you've ever dreamed of a Robinson Crusoe legacy game, well, this is as close as you're going to get for the time being. And hey, if nothing else, pick up a copy for more cards, more tokens, more tiles, more stuff. Or, if you're feeling frisky, hop on board as we leave civilization and penetrate deeper and deeper into the heart of darkness. My name is Andrew Davidson. I hope I have given you something to think about.